Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, I'm looking at a video version of a podcast of a guy reading text articles from creation.com. So, basically, this is the same as when I respond to a text article, except I don't have to add stupid effects to my voice to make it clear when it's me and when it's an idiot, because I know that can be a very hard distinction to make without help. Anyway, this article is called The Earth: How Old Does It Look? And it's by none other than Carl Wayland, the guy who was in charge of the Answers in Genesis Australia branch before he had a spat with Ken Ham and separated off into a separate group, Creation Ministries International. So, let's see how old Carl thinks the Earth looks.
Even many of those who believe that the Earth is young think it looks old. But does it?
Since that is such a subjective question, it's impossible to answer definitively. But generally speaking, the more someone understands about the various processes that have shaped the Earth, the more likely that person is to think that the Earth does indeed look old, because the features that the Earth has would have taken a lot longer than 6,000 years to form. I'm going to skip the anecdote that's coming up ahead, but when we come back in, he is speaking with reference to an alleged incident where a non-young Earth creationist had a agreed with him that the Earth looks young when he told the person that he believes the Earth to be 6,000 to 10,000 years old.
Pondering this incident at a later date, I realized that my own reaction showed that, however strong my conviction in the biblical record, and however strong some recent creation evidences may be, I had become unconsciously influenced by the notion that the Earth, though young, looks old.
This might have something to do with the fact that once you learn how rocks form, especially sedimentary rocks, you realize that even being incredibly generous with how long it takes them to form, the Earth has to take billions of years in order to allow enough time for the formation of these rocks. When we look at the entirety of the fossil record, we see evidence of multiple complete ecosystems that are completely isolated from one another, often at the same location in different stratigraphic layers, often depicting completely different environments. When you find a marine ecosystem in one layer, then move up a bit and find a desert ecosystem, and then move up a bit more and find another completely different marine ecosystem, it obviously took a lot of time for these ecosystems to establish themselves and for the environment to change enough to accommodate those different ecosystems. And this is just one piece of a very large puzzle.
In fact, there are many firmly Bible-believing Christians who think that way. Even in the kosher creationist literature, there are sometimes attempts to explain why the Earth has an appearance of age, meaning that from a certain point of view, it looks old.
Yes, and that's because it is very easy to show why the Earth looks old, such that even someone who starts off thinking it looks young can become convinced of the appearance of age in relatively short order with fairly simple explanations of things like what I've just pointed out. So creationists have to explain away all of the evidence that points to an old Earth, rather than just presenting their evidence that the Earth is young. And then their evidence turns out to be rather pathetic by comparison. The oldest coral reef is only 4,000 years old! This proves that all coral reefs started after the flood 4,000 years ago. That would be like saying that I can't be more than 8 years old because that was the last time I shaved my beard. Besides which, there are living organisms that are more than 10,000 years old, so even if we just want to go with the oldest living thing on the planet, we get well beyond young Earth creationist dates, with the Pando Forest being a clonal tree colony that is about 80,000 years old.
But in fact, it's easy to demonstrate that this cannot be true. Even if the Earth really were millions or billions of years old, one could not say that it looked old. That one glance at rock layers and canyons just screamed old Earth.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Like I said, how something appears to you is extremely subjective. Whether or not it looks old can change depending on your understanding of geology, archaeology, paleontology, astronomy, biology, and any science, really. I mean, that being said, as old as the hills has been a phrase to describe really, really old things since the 1700s, because everyone knows that the hills are really old. But of course, old is once again subjective here. To someone who thinks the Earth is 6,000 years old, saying something is as old as the hills could just very easily mean that it's a few thousand years old.
To justify that statement, I don't even have to get into sophisticated references to modern philosophers of science who agree that no facts speak for themselves anyway.
Right, no facts speak for themselves. But the problem here is that there are several facts that don't leave enough room for interpretation to include a young Earth creationist worldview. For instance, the age of a rock sample is a fact. We often can't pin it down exactly, error bars are a thing, but it is a fact. So, for instance, it is a fact that the oldest zircon crystal that we have been able to date is 4.375 billion years old, with an error bar of plus or minus 6 million years, which means that, being incredibly generous in saying that it is indeed 6 million years younger than the date given, the oldest zircon crystal on the Earth is 4.369 billion years old, some 4.36899 billion years older than the oldest acceptable young Earth creation age of 10,000 years. This is a fact. This is not an interpretation. And the fact of the matter is that this means that the Earth is at least 5 orders of magnitude older than the young Earth creation model can accept.
All we need to do is remember that some of the greatest minds that ever lived, the fathers of modern science, Newton, for example, looked at the same Earth that we look at today and did not see millions of years.
Yeah, a lot of scientists who existed before we learned how rocks formed believed in a relatively young Earth. But once we started making progress in geology, it became quite clear that the Earth is indeed much older than just a few thousand years, though exactly how old was a matter of debate for a few centuries. It went from being 6,000 years old in the 1600s, to being infinitely old in the 1700s, to being about 100 million years old in the 1800s, until our understanding of radiation pushed the date back to about 4.5 billion years in the 1920s, and it has remained relatively stable at that position ever since. Basically, as much as I have been suggesting that any science nowadays can get you to an older Earth than creationism allows for, it is really geology that made the first leaps in that direction. Once we figured out the basics of geology, a 6,000-year-old Earth was conclusively taken off the table. And it is, of course, at this point where creationists will start saying, "See, science keeps changing its mind, so clearly it doesn't know what it's talking about." Except that's not the case. Science learned more things and honed in on the correct answer as it learned.
Let's summarize some of the evidence that is consistent with a young age of the world. First, the continents are eroding too quickly. If the continents were billions of years old, they would have eroded by wind and water many times over. Mountain uplift and other recycling processes are nowhere near capable of compensating for this.
This conclusion is arrived at by averaging the rate of erosion from several different rivers all over the world, then assuming that these erosional rates are constant and basically ignoring any deposition or uplift. I mean, ignoring the fact that they don't even calculate an erosion rate that's fast enough to counteract uplift. The fastest erosion rate they calculated was 1 meter per 1,000 years, and Mount Everest, as an example, grows by 1 meter every 200 years or so. But if we ignore this, then we're left with the fact that creationists are also ignoring isostatic forces, that is, the buoyancy between the Earth's crust and mantle. The more a surface erodes, the faster uplift will happen. North America is currently, and has been for the last 1.5 billion years, in a state of isostatic equilibrium. There's not a whole lot of erosion going on, and neither is there a whole lot of uplift. But yes, some rivers move a lot of material, and if you average that out across the whole surface of the Earth while ignoring all sorts of other factors, you do get some wonky numbers.
Second, there's not enough helium in the atmosphere. Helium is a light gas, and it's formed during radioactive alpha decay in rock minerals. It rapidly escapes and enters the atmosphere much faster than it can escape from Earth's gravity. Even if God had created the world with no helium to begin with, the small amount in the atmosphere would have taken at most around 2 million years to accumulate. This is far less than the assumed 3,000 to million year age of the atmosphere.
The problem with this claim is that they only look at how fast helium would escape from the atmosphere due to it overcoming the force of gravity. There are other factors at play here, and unsurprisingly, these are ignored by creationists. For one, helium can also escape just due to its temperature. Its thermal energy alone can be sufficient to propel helium atoms to escape velocity. Second, and most frequently ignored by the creationists, atmospheric helium can become ionized, which will cause it to follow the Earth's magnetic field lines, ending up outside the atmosphere where it can then be blown away by solar wind in a mechanism known as the ion outflow mechanism. The overly simplistic creationist calculations tend to minimize these effects, if they even bother to address them in the first place.
Thirdly, many fossils indicate that they must have been formed quickly, not taking long time spans.
I have a prediction to make. They're going to bring up the fossils of organisms that were obviously buried very rapidly and pretend that rapid burial is somehow not accounted for in the evolutionist interpretation, as though anyone who doesn't accept young Earth creation must picture a dead organism remaining undisturbed for millions of years as sediment slowly accumulates around it, rather than most fossils being the result of pretty much instant burial. And of course, my use of the term instant here is a bit loose. There are, after all, plenty of fossils that show evidence of the animal being picked at by scavengers after it died, so it doesn't have to be buried right away, just before the bones decompose.
There are billions of fossil fish in rock layers around the world which are incredibly well preserved. They frequently show intact fins and often scales, indicating they were buried rapidly and the rock hardened quickly. In the real world, dead fish are scavenged within 24 hours. Even in some idealized, cold, sterile, predator-free, and oxygen-free water, they will become soggy and fall apart within weeks.
Which is why the fossilization process is so rare. Very few organisms ever get fossilized. It's estimated that the fossil record only documents 0.1% of all the animal species to have ever lived, and we haven't even found all of those yet. And we know that the fossil record is biased towards certain creatures with hard bones or shells, as those are the easiest bits to preserve. Insects represent the vast majority of animals to have ever lived, and yet the fossil record is relatively insect poor, because they don't fossilize as easy as, say, a clam whose empty shell can hang around for quite a while even after the clam itself is dead.
A fish buried quickly in sediment that does not harden within a few weeks at the most will still be subject to decay by oxygen and bacteria, such that the delicate features like fins and scales would not preserve their form.
There are a few issues here. Firstly, them being buried in underwater landslides and other sedimentary processes is not indicative of a worldwide flood. It's indicative of underwater landslides and other sedimentary processes. Secondly, these landslides and other sedimentary processes that can rapidly bury a creature are things that happen all the time, so why would we not expect the occasional animal to be buried in such events over the course of the hundreds of millions to billions of years that life has been around? Third, the same thing applies to the permineralization process if these organisms were buried in one flood or multiple smaller events. If it takes too long to turn to stone, it won't be preserved. So if how long the permineralization process takes is a problem for the evolutionary view of fossilization, then the same applies to the creationist view. And fourth, there is a process known as the Medusa effect in which bacterial decay, combined with the presence of calcium phosphate, can result in the permineralization process completing within hours if the right conditions are met. So we know of processes that still happen today that are capable of adequately burying organisms for fossilization, and we know of processes that can cause permineralization to happen very rapidly. So what exactly is the problem for an old Earth supposed to be here?
Also, we've often featured in our magazine instances which are particularly spectacular, like the pregnant ichthyosaur apparently freeze-framed in a fossil in the process of giving birth. Then there are the fossil fish which are found either in the process of swallowing other fish, or with undigested fish intact in their stomachs.
None of which have any relevance to the age of the Earth. Things die while eating and giving birth. Whoop-de-doo! You telling me that if an animal died right after eating a meal, that meal should continue to be digested before that animal has a chance to be fossilized? Hell, one of the factors that speeds up the fossilization process is an acidic environment. That's when, if there is calcium phosphate present, the calcium phosphate crystals will form very rapidly, replacing the organic material pretty much as fast as it decays away, sometimes preserving details that are at the cellular level. Well, the digestive tract is usually quite an acidic environment, so maybe that plays a part. I mean, that's just speculation on my part, I haven't looked into it, but yeah, stomach contents can sometimes be found in fossils. This has no bearing on the age of the Earth or the age of the fossil itself. It just says that the fossil was sealed off from the environment before the stomach contents decayed. That's it. And creationists don't propose any mechanism for that that wouldn't also be at work in just a normal environment that is subject to occasional events like mudslides that have a tendency to bury animals.
Fourthly, many processes which we have been told take millions of years do not need such time spans at all.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the, if we give it ideal lab conditions, it can form faster than in non-ideal natural conditions, therefore nature formed it in lab condition time, portion of the presentation.
First, there's coal formation. Argonne National Laboratories have shown that heated wood and clay at 150 degrees Celsius for 4 to 36 weeks in a sealed quartz tube with no added pressure forms high-grade black coal.
Sure, why not? Now, how does that explain the fossilized soil horizons often found just below the coal layers that are filled with fossilized roots of the plants that made up the coal? The creationist explanation for coal involves floating vegetation mats that end up being deposited in deep water. So why are there roots, soil horizons, river channels, levees, and dinosaur footprints on the top surfaces of some of the coal seams? That doesn't fit with the flood model, but it does fit perfectly with the idea that coal formed as a result of the dense vegetation found in peat bogs.
Secondly, there's stalactites and stalagmites. Many examples in Creation magazine have shown that cave decorations form quickly given the right conditions. A mining tunnel in Mount Isa, Queensland, Australia was only 50 years old, but covered in floor-to-ceiling stalactites and stalagmites.
Okay, that's nice, but I have yet to hear of anyone claiming that the Earth is old because of such formations. The speed of stalactite formation can be affected by many factors: the pH of the water, the chemical composition of the cave, how much water is present, etc. Some fast-growing stalactites can grow at a rate of 4 centimeters per year, which, in the 50-year time period between that tunnel's creation and the picture of that tunnel shown in the article, would mean that we'd expect the stalactites to be about 2 meters long. Now, it's hard to tell scale from the picture, as there are clearly stalactites in the foreground that look longer than they probably are just due to perspective, but it's also helpful to point out that stalactites tend to grow much faster in man-made tunnels and basements than they do in natural caves. And this is in a man-made tunnel, so we'd expect decent stalactite growth in that time. Now, how is this relevant to the age of the Earth? Oh, that's right, it's not.
Thirdly, opals. Despite the common teaching that it takes millions of years to form opal, Australian researcher Lynn Cram has been long growing opal in his backyard laboratory. His opal is indistinguishable under the electron microscope from that mined in the field.
Yeah, when you provide the absolute perfect conditions for opal formation, opals can form rapidly. Of course, it takes much longer in nature because nature doesn't provide perfect lab conditions, but even if it didn't, this is, once again, completely irrelevant to the age of the Earth. Nobody has ever claimed that the Earth is 4.5 billion years old based on how long it takes opals to form.
Fourthly, there's rock and fossil formation. Scientists have long known that petrification can happen quickly.
Petrification and fossilization are not the same thing. But as I mentioned earlier, how long it takes for the permineralization process to complete is, once again, irrelevant when it comes to the age of the Earth, or even the age of the fossil. We don't date a fossil by estimating how long it would take to become permineralized. We have other methods that are independent of such processes. So since we've already discussed this one, I'm just going to go ahead and skip to the next one.
Now, moving on, while we're looking for signs of old age, consider that the oceans are nowhere near salty enough. Each year, the world's rivers and underground streams add millions of tons of salt to the sea, and only a fraction of this goes back onto the land. Using the most favorable possible assumptions for long agers, the absolute maximum age of the oceans is only a tiny fraction of their assumed billions of years age.
Well, according to Drs. Humphreys and Austin, two creationists, just for the record, the current salinity levels indicate an age of 62 million years. Of course, the creationist answer to this is just that God made the oceans with a bit of salt to begin with, but this is about whether or not the Earth looks old, and given that creationists have found that the oceans look like they could be millions of years old based on salinity levels, then even if you think that God started the oceans off with a bit of salt, the appearance of age is still there, while the appearance of youth is lacking. So, a charitable interpretation of this argument still leaves us thinking the Earth looks old. But, of course, there are a number of problems with using the salinity of the oceans as a chronometer, not the least of which is that it is extremely difficult to get an accurate measurement of the ocean salt level at any given moment, not to mention all the various inputs and outputs. And then, when you actually look at the ocean salinity data collected since the 1950s, there are areas of local salinity increase and local salinity decrease, which, taken as a whole, pretty much cancel each other out. And of course, this is all assuming that all of this is constant. Make one change to the rate of salinization of the oceans, and this whole chronometer goes out the window. And guess what? It changes. So the salinity of the ocean fails not only because the Earth still looks old even if we run with all the creationist assumptions, but it fails even more spectacularly when we look into the actual science of the matter. And Austin and Humphreys ignored no less than 16 salt removal processes from their paper that concluded that the oceans are no older than 62 million years.
Despite some inevitable unsolved problems in such a complex issue, it is thus not hard to establish that 1. The reasonableness of believing what the creator of the world says in his word, the Bible, about the world being thousands, not millions or billions of years old. And 2. The fact that the Earth neither looks old nor young as such. It all depends on the glasses through which the evidence is interpreted.
Maybe, but so far in your article/podcast about how the Earth actually looks young, you haven't given any reason to conclude that it looks young. You have, in fact, provided at least a few details that make the Earth look old, such as the salinity level of the oceans. Saying that some processes which are known to happen fast or slow depending on the conditions can sometimes happen fast in the right conditions does not actually show the Earth to have a youthful appearance. It just says that those particular processes do not inherently make it look old. But there are plenty of processes that, once understood, will definitely make the Earth look much older than creationists would have you believe. Now, up next in the article, there's a lengthy section on how 6,000 years really is old, in which the author just rambles on about how the word old is relative and can mean different things in different contexts. I agree, and I've already pointed that out, so I'm just gonna skip it.
So, about those radiocarbon dating methods.
Radiocarbon dating is one of the radiometric dating methods. There are multiple radiocarbon dating methods, of course, but I feel like that's not what's being referenced here. This seems like more of a dump all the radiometric methods into the same category, even though there are many different methods that work in many different ways kind of thing.
First, all dating methods, including ones that point to thousands, not billions of years, are based on assumptions. Beliefs, no matter how reasonable sounding, that you can't prove, but must be accepted by faith. For example, assuming how much of a particular chemical was originally present in the object. Second, assuming that there has been no leaching by water of the chemicals in or out of the rock. And the assumption that radioactive decay rates have stayed the same for billions of years, and there's many other assumptions they could make.
Those are the three primary assumptions that creationists take issue with, yes, all of which are adequately dealt with in various ways depending on the dating method, but my favorite is the isochron method. Isochron dating is a difficult topic to wrap your head around, so for more detail I'd recommend my video on dating methods, which does go into isochron dating, but to simplify, it uses isotopes of atoms that decay into an element that also has a stable non-radiogenic variety. For instance, rubidium-87 decays into strontium-87, but strontium-86 is non-radiogenic, meaning that it is not the product of radioactive decay, and it does not undergo decay. Because a forming rock does not discriminate between the various isotopes, if any strontium were present while the rock was forming, it would include both isotopes in the same proportion as they were in that environment before the rock formed. Because of this, you can use the ratios of strontium-86 to strontium-87 and to rubidium-87 in order to determine how much strontium-87 would have been present during the rock's formation, and if you take multiple samples and plot the ratios on an isochron diagram, the line will only be linear if there was no contamination of rubidium or strontium any time after the rock was formed, and no rubidium or strontium was leached out by water.
or any other method for that matter. And of course, the consistency of radiometric decay rates is not an assumption. It is something that has been tested time and time again, and continues to be regularly tested. So far, the only variation in decay rates to be detected is in atoms with half-lives too short to be used for dating, and that variation is typically significantly less than 1%. So if I'm extremely generous and say that this indicates that long half-life elements could have had a variation in their decay rate of 10%, a ridiculously large number, then that means that the Earth could be 4.0887 billion years old instead of 4.543 billion years old. And that's assuming that they've just been decaying 10% faster than currently measured, constantly, right up until we started measuring them, and then suddenly they just slowed down by 10% for some unknown reason. If there is variation, and it does correlate with space weather, as is suggested to be the case with the variations that we have seen, then it wouldn't be a consistent number. It would be a fluctuation, sometimes faster, sometimes slower. But my point is here that, worst case scenario, the Earth is still over 4 billion years old.
So, number two, radiometric dating labs do not measure age. They measure amounts of chemicals, then from this, they infer age, based on the underlying assumptions.
No, they don't, strictly speaking, measure the age. They measure amounts of chemicals, and then they don't infer the age. They calculate the age based on well-founded and consistently reliable methods, while still using multiple different methods just in case.
Third, when the assumptions are tested by measuring rocks of known age, for example, recent lava flows, they often fail miserably.
There are two well-known phenomena that creationists like to misrepresent when talking about the radiometric dating of rocks of known ages. First, rocks that form in a lava flow will often contain xenoliths, that is, smaller bits of rock that were not melted by the lava, but remained intact. Because these are older rocks contained within newer rocks, they will, naturally, date older than the newer rocks. Several studies have been done on the dating of such xenoliths, and keywords to look out for to see if a creationist is using one of these studies to claim that new rocks are dating old are the aforementioned xenolith, as well as inclusions. Because while the creationists are fond of using such papers to bolster their arguments, I have yet to see one explain what a xenolith or an inclusion is. Not even the geologist creationists like Andrew Snelling or Steve Austin, who have legitimate geology credentials and so have to know these basic geology terms. The other phenomenon is that of the absorption of atmospheric argon by rock as it crystallizes, which is enough to throw off the potassium-argon date by a lot in young samples, but will not have a significant impact in rocks that are a few million years old or older. So in that case, when creationists send young rocks to be dated, they come back with weird dates because the rocks are too young to be dated with that method. Either way, the only problems here are creationists cherry-picking the data or misusing the scientific techniques that have been developed, purposely exploiting known issues with the dating method in an attempt to claim that scientists are either unaware of such issues or are engaged in a cover-up conspiracy to make sure that nobody learns of them. But given the numerous papers published on these issues, which creationists are perfectly happy to point to, it makes it hard to believe that the scientists are unaware of the issue or that they're engaged in a cover-up. You know, because of the whole publicly available research papers on the subject?
Fourth, objects of the same age, tested by different methods, have been shown to give dates varying by a factor of 1,000.
The paper referenced in the article is one by Andrew Snelling. Funny how the same two or three names keep coming up for the research that actually supports a young Earth. But that paper has a number of issues. The main thrust of it was that he found wood within basalt, a volcanic rock. So lava flows over the wood, cools, and now you have wood encased in basalt. The problem here is not that Snelling dated the same material with multiple dating methods and got different results, it's that he dated the wood with radiocarbon dating and the basalt with potassium-argon dating and got different results. The results for the wood were all very close to the maximum detectable age for carbon dating in 1993 when Snelling was doing his work, and the error bars on those dates were unusually high, which indicates that the sample was of poor quality. And the rock that he dated, as he himself noted in the paper, was from a weathering zone, with percolating groundwater altering the mineral and rock chemistry, which would easily account for the presence of carbon-14 that should be absent in the fossilized wood of that age. This barely even scratches the surface of the many, many issues with this particular study, but suffice it to say for now that its results are not sufficient to warrant the discarding of radiometric dating as a whole.
Fifth, The fact that there is some consistency to radiometric dates is explained in part by the tendency to publish only data consistent with the evolutionary age already established by fossils.
That is just flat out not true. When researchers send samples to be dated, especially if they're using multiple different methods, they will include a table listing all of the samples and the dates that were obtained for those samples using the different methods. Anomalies are a semi-regular occurrence and can be used as an indicator that there might be something else wrong with the research, and so a lot of effort goes into figuring out why these anomalous results are anomalous rather than just ignoring them and not publishing them.
And sixth, if a radiometric date and a fossil evolutionary date conflict, the radiometric date is always discarded.
That depends very much on what you mean by discarded. If you mean included in the paper and accompanied by an explanation as to why the date was off, with an unknown reason leading to further research specifically into that dating method, then sure. Because at this point, there are index fossils whose dates are so well established that to have one dated outside of its expected range would require a substantial amount of corroborating evidence. The anomalous date is not discarded or ignored, but it is assumed to be wrong and investigation is made into how it could have gone wrong. It is, of course, possible that an index fossil could have a greater temporal range than we are currently aware of, but it is more likely that a rock sample was contaminated sometime before it was analyzed for dating. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Alex Hall, and it's all, like, dark and stuff, because YouTube finally got around to making a dark mode for the Creator Studio. Yay! But you guys don't care about that. The comment of the day is day? Of asking for a supercut of the ending gags. Well, this is the first comment of this nature that I've seen, and I didn't know there was a demand for that. Anyone else want me to do that? Because I just might at some point if you want me to. And just some housekeeping before I go. I am going away for a week with the kids this month, so I've been working hard to get my videos done well in advance. But even so, I may end up missing a video or two this month. My money's on me missing the video for the 25th, but I'll know more when it gets closer. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Mark McManus, Mark Hetchum, Clench Eastwood, Lynn Dobbs, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the rapidly forming opals in the test tube that is my channel. If you'd like to have nothing whatsoever to do with the age of the Earth, you can join us on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form or listen to my podcast with my daughter, the links for those are also in the description. As well as links to my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time! The spalete of the spalactites.